It's 8 p.m. Stay with us. Outbeat Radio is next.
Everybody, welcome to Outbeat Radio on KRCB Windsor Santa Rosa, a program that focuses on issues by, for, and or about members of the gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender communities. You can hear Outbeat Radio every Sunday night at 8 p.m.
This is Living Proof, and we're your hosts. I'm Dr. Diana Grayer, and next to me is my co-host and wife, Sheridan Gold. Tonight in studio, we have Dr. Michelle Moraine, co-founder of Conscious Girlfriend and co-author of her new book, or their newest book, Conscious Lesbian Dating and Love, a roadmap to finding the right partner and creating the relationship of your dreams.
And the reason you said theirs because Michelle, hi Michelle.
Hi.
You co-wrote this book with your wife, Ruth, Dr. Uh-huh. Ruth Schwartz, who couldn't be with us tonight.
Unfortunately, she couldn't be with us
So we want to just say hello. Shout out to Ruth.
Well, thanks for having me. And sorry that she can't be here, but it's wonderful to be here.
Mm-hmm. Well, on the back of your book, it says, quote, "Great relationships don't happen by accident, luck, or magic. Instead, that are a direct result of the choices you make and the actions you take." I like that. It's rhymes, you know?
Uh-huh, yeah.
The choices you make and the actions you take. Drawing from neuroscience, psychology, and spirituality, this book provides a roadmap to get you to the deeply fulfilling love you've always wanted, no matter how many heartbreaks you've had in the past. Mm. And that, I think, is a really great paragraph that summarizes this book. Mm-hmm. And we have friends right now, currently in our life, that I wrote to and said, you need to listen to this show because we know what you're after. I won't say your name, but you know who you are.
But then we went across, we came across two other friends today and we told them about you. It's like all these friends that come into mind, Michelle. And we say, okay, we got to have you listen. But we look so forward to learning about your book. We had you 2 years ago.
I know. It was amazing. It seems like in some ways it was just yesterday. And in other ways, it was a couple of years. But it's really fabulous to be back.
And you're back with this new book.
With a new book,
So we're really looking forward to learning about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was fun to put together and fun to kind of, you know, a lot of our work has been, you know, we do a lot of different kinds of work in different kinds of settings, and it was nice to kind of get it packaged into this.
Mm-hmm. This it's a beautiful looking book. Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
If somebody, during the news that we're going to break for in just a second, if somebody wants to look this up on the internet, where can they find it?
Actually, you can find it on Amazon. Or other places. If probably you just Google Conscious Lesbian Dating and Love, you'll find the book.
Conscious
Lesbian Dating and Love.
Dating and Love. So everybody, if you'd like, put that in your Google, get a picture of it. Mm-hmm. Will they be able to see your picture online as well?
Probably. You can also go to ConsciousGirlfriend.com/book.
Okay. ConsciousGirlfriend.com/book to see the book and to see Michelle and her wife, Ruth. So for anyone who's been listening to Living Proof all these years, you know that relationship building and shows on relationships, they are right up our alley, up Diana and my, up our alley. Because,
baby,
you know, we are living proof that long-term relationships can exist and do exist. And last December, we celebrated our 38th year together.
Whoa.
And we do like to just, thank you. We like to put that out there every once in a while because, you know, people don't really know that, or they needed to be reminded, or we like to flaunt it. One or something like that. I don't know.
We work what you're talking about, honey.
Yeah. I'm sure you do.
So we're really curious to speak with you and your process on writing the book and what else you both are doing in these last 2 years.
Okay.
But first, we have news and events with Outbeat member and our engineer, Greg Moralia.
I have found Outbeat Radio News, your source for LGBT news from the North Bay and beyond.
Good evening, this is Greg Moralia with your Outbeat Radio News for this Sunday, May 1st, 2016. In Bangladesh, suspected Islamic militants hacked to death a leading gay rights activist employed by the United States Embassy and a friend in an apartment in Bangladesh's capital this last Monday. The killings took place 2 days after a university professor was slain in a similar fashion on Saturday in an attack claimed by the Islamic State. Five or six assailants went into the apartment of Zulaz Manan, 35 years old, who's an editor for Ruban, Bangladesh's first magazine for gay, bisexual, and transgender people, and attacked him and a friend with a sharp weapon. Dhaka City Police spokesman Maruf Hussein Sudar said they entered the apartment disguised as couriers. The assailants also wounded a security guard. Witnesses said the attackers shouted, "Allah Akbar, God is greatest," as they fled the scene. Manan was employed by the U.S. Embassy working for the U.S. Agency for International Development. State Department spokesman John Kirby said the United States was outraged by the barbaric attack. He called Manan a beloved member of our embassy family and a courageous advocate for LGBT rights. And here in the U.S., former U.S. Senator Harris Wooford told the New York Times that he had two loves in his life, his late wife Claire and his soon-to-be spouse, Matthew Carlton. The 90-year-old Pennsylvania statesman said it's been a good fortune to pair love with a best friend twice in his life. He said, "Too often our society seeks to label people by pinning them to a wall, straight, gay, or in between. I don't characterize myself based on the gender of those I love," he said. "I had half a century of marriage with a wonderful woman, and now I'm lucky for a second time to have found happiness." Woodford reflected on his life with his wife of 48 years. They have three children, and how he unexpectedly fell in love with Carlton 5 years after her death back in 1996. He said, "Same-sex marriage equality seemed impossible at one time in America. I was wrong and should not have been so pessimistic." Wooford was a former advisor to President John F. Kennedy and Martin Luther King Jr. And in Missouri, the St. Louis Post-Dispatch reported that Missouri's House Emerging Issues Committee voted down a controversial anti-LGBT religious freedom bill with a tie vote of 6-6. This effectively kills the bill for this legislative session. Mike Colonna, the only openly gay politician in Missouri's legislature, shared his coming out story during an emotional half hour of testimony that left many in tears. He said, "What you witnessed here today was a reflection of what Missourians are really about." House Majority Leader Jacob Hummel said, "The ultimate issue here is whether our state constitution protects all Missourians or grants special rights to some to the detriment of others. In the years to come, I'm confident today's action will be remembered as being on the right side of history." And here locally, in San Francisco, the long-awaited upgraded escalators at the Castro Street Muni Station now include a surprising effect, rainbow lights. According to San Francisco Municipal Transit Authority, the escalators, along with their rainbow lights, will be up and running as early as this coming week. San Francisco City Supervisor Scott Weiner said, "It's a great idea to use rainbow LED lighting along the Castro Station's escalators. Harvey Milk Plaza is the heart of our neighborhood, and sending a clear message about our neighborhood's identity as an LGBT haven is powerful. We've worked hard to make our great neighborhood even better, including the Castro Street sidewalk widening and streetscape project, the strengthening of the GLBT History Museum, and the opening of Strut, our new health center. We have more work to do, including transforming Harvey Milk Plaza into a usable, culturally relevant, and beautiful space. For now, though, adding a beautiful rainbow touch to the escalators is a step forward." Now here's your calendar of events for the coming week. On Monday, May 2nd at 2 p.m., the Sonoma General LGBT Support Group will meet at the Sonoma Community Center, 276 East Street in Sonoma. And on Tuesday, May 3rd at 10 a.m., the Napa Valley Older Adults Discussion Group will convene at the Queen of the Valley Community Center, 3448 Villa Lane in Napa. And also on Tuesday at 6 p.m., the Transgender North Bay Male to Female Group will meet at the Positive Images Center, 312 Chin Street in Santa Rosa. And on Wednesday, May 4th at 5 p.m., Spectrum's Youth Support Group will gather at the Spectrum Center, 910 Irwin Street in San Rafael. And on Thursday, May 5th at 12 noon, the men's brown bag lunch and discussion will happen at the Spectrum Center at the same location. For more information about LGBT events happening here in the North Bay, go to gaysonoma.com. And for all your 2016 Pride celebration information for Napa, Sonoma, and San Francisco, go to our website at outbeatnews.com. Be sure to like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter for updates from Outbeat Radio News all week long. For Gary Carnevale, I'm Greg Moralia. Now back to Living Proof with Sheridan Gold and Dr. Diana Greyer.
Outbeat Radio News, your source for LGBT news from the North Bay and beyond.
And this is Living Proof. If you just joined us, I'm Sheridan, and sitting next to me is Diana, my wife and co-host. And in studio is our guest tonight, Michelle Moraine, and she is here talking about her book and her business and her
and all the other things that she's doing. Yeah. And we're ready to jump right in because I know you have a whole list of things to talk about.
I do.
But Michelle was just in the East Bay.
Yeah, I was just in Oakland. We often, about every quarter, we give a free workshop for single lesbians. And basically it takes them through some of our work, but it focuses on the skills, just like you were reading, you know, the choices they can make and the actions they can take to change what has been often for them a, you know, sort of a troublesome relationship history. They can go from that to finding the right partner and being the right partner.
Ah,
so yeah,
being the right partner.
So it's not just finding the right partner. I think a lot of people think, if I just find her, you know, I just find her, you know, she's out there somewhere, and there'll be magic, and we'll ride off into the sunset. But it's the being the right partner that's a really important key, and so we teach that as well. I mean, we can't teach that much in 3 hours; it's a pretty short workshop, but we try to give people a taste of the kinds of skills that they'll need to be the right partner.
So could you highlight like an example just so other people out there listening, because you know we have friends listening.
Yes. Yeah.
You listening, so, DM.
We actually have an acronym. We love acronyms, right? It's our favorite thing. And it's an acronym. It's called CATCH. And it's five skills that you need to look for in a partner, and also that you need to develop on your own to be the right partner. And so the first C is compassion for self and others. So you have compassion for yourself and for other people. And the A is that you're aware of your feelings, you know, just about when you feel them or 20 minutes later or something, but you have a sense of what you're feeling, that you can tolerate your feelings without blowing up or shutting down or self-medicating. People self-medicate in all sorts of ways, not just drugs, but, you know, food or video games, my favorite, or, you know, whatever, right? No, novel reading, right? So you can tolerate your feelings without having to do that, and also without having to blow up or scream or whatever. And you, the second C is that you can communicate your feelings without criticism, blame, or self-blame or defensiveness. And then the H, which we think is the linchpin in a way, is that you're happy to learn and grow. Because if you're happy to learn and grow, you can learn the other skills, right? But that's, and oftentimes, you know, I've encountered, we sometimes encounter women who are like, well, I have all the skills and I'm just trying to find her. And then, you know, we talk to them a little bit more and we sort of scratch the surface and turn out, well, actually, you know, they didn't actually know how to communicate without criticism to the last partner, you know, or they weren't able to really tolerate their feelings without shutting down or blowing up. So it takes sometimes people, I think, oftentimes think they have some of these skills, but they actually need to really work on them.
How do you work with someone who wants to be happy and wanting, you know, open to learning, but then they have this defensiveness? You know what I mean?
Yeah. You know? Sure. That's a great question. And I think defensiveness basically comes about because people are afraid. It's fear. Fear is, you know, I think in our society doesn't like fear. I mean, unless we're like roller coasters or you know, horror, or, you know, the going to those haunted houses or whatever. But for the most part, we actually don't like fear. We're afraid of fear. We want to sort of minimize it. We want to not talk about it. But fear in relationships is huge. we're afraid of losing the attachment to the other person. We're afraid of what they think of us. We're afraid of, oh, maybe we messed something up. There's so many fears we have in relationships, and being able to befriend your fear and learn how to recognize it when it's happening, learn how to, we get triggered, you know, with the sort of that really strong fear, learn how to handle that, breathe through it, that can dismantle the defensiveness. Mm-hmm. Because if you recognize, oh, wow, I'm afraid, I'm feeling this twist in my belly, and maybe, wow, maybe I made a mistake, you know. If you can recognize that and say that, you don't have to be defensive. Because it's not, you know, it's like, oh, well, you know, we're human beings. We're all human. We make mistakes, you know. And so you can befriend that and not have to be defensive.
And when you say befriend that.
So befriending fear is just a way of recognizing it and feeling compassion for ourselves in that fear. And also being able to sort of go, you know, to go beyond it, not have it. Dictate what we do, because I think oftentimes we allow fear to run us. Mm-hmm. We allow fear. We behave out of fear. Mm-hmm. But if we can recognize the fear and say, "Oh, there you are, fear. Hi. You know, I see you over there." But then act skillfully and speak skillfully. That takes care of a lot of things, because we're like aware of the fear. We recognize it. We're okay with it. We have compassion for ourselves in feeling that fear. And so we don't have to act out of the fear. Mm-hmm. That makes sense?
Yeah. So are women really like coming forth and wanting to be vulnerable? I mean, to really look at themselves deeply like this?
I think it takes some time to sort of warm up to it. But I do think that having a happy relationship, having a really fulfilling, connected, really intimate relationship is something women really want. And they realize, well, if I can learn these skills and I can get that, it's worth it. Mm-hmm. So I think that is something, you know, that it helps, because it's like, oh, okay, I can see how being vulnerable, expressing my feelings, being able to handle my triggers and tolerate them and speak skillfully can actually make a relationship better. And so I'll do that. I'll learn that. And I work with couples too. We both work with couples, and helping them learn those skills, and they really can make a big difference in their relationships.
I'm curious about the women that are attending. Mm-hmm. Are they like, have they had history of bad relationships and they want to try something else, or are they like, you know, I'm just trying to understand. They held back
it's a
and
range.
Just don't want to be. Yeah, don't want to be
it's
in a relationship because they're too afraid.
It's a real range. Okay. I mean, some women who work with us are women who are kind of like us in that they are, you know, personal growth junkies in a way. You know, the people who are really focused on personal growth and really want to learn more. Maybe they have a long Buddhist meditation practice, or maybe they've done 12 step, or, you know, so that sort of inclination is there. But for a lot of women, they've had. They've had, you know, three or four breakups in a row, and they're really scared about trying again, because like, oh my God, what if the same thing happens again? We definitely have a lot of folks like that who just have come to the end of their, like, they realize, wow, you know, I don't know what's happening. I don't know why this has happened, but, you know, this last breakup was, you know, it's like the one that showed me that I obviously am doing something wrong, or I need to figure out what's happening. And so they're like, oh, well, there's this resource here. Let's figure this out. Mm-hmm. And we do also get women who, I mean, we have some percentage of women who just came out. I mean, they've been with men for a while and they're just coming out, and they don't really know what they need. They're sort of new to the whole thing, and that's been interesting too. Mm-hmm. So, and we have women, most of the women we work with are over 40. We have a lot of women over 50 and 60 and even over 70. A big age range. I think younger women haven't quite gone through enough, you know,
breakups.
Yeah, or whatever. Or, you know, for younger women, I think it's like they've got time. You know, they're like, oh, you know, I'll try this and I'll try that. And, you know, especially if they're not really sort of family oriented, they don't want to, like, you know, settle down and have kids or whatever. They're like, oh, I'll try this and I'll try that. They're sort of, they have more time. Whereas I think once women get to be, you know, sort of mid 50s or whatever, they're like, wow, they're looking at, we're looking at sort of, I see, down not so far around, you know, there's that, there's the end. And, and if they're single, they really want to have that one last relationship. You know, so that's a common thing.
So you mentioned earlier that there are people that want to get vulnerable. Diana asked you, and you said, oh, yeah, they're there, and they want to learn and grow and all that.
Yeah.
So if you have a couple, have you ever had a couple where one wants to grow and learn and be vulnerable and work hard, and the other one wants no part of it?
Yes.
And they want to stay together.
Yes.
How does that, what do you...
It's really hard. It's really hard. It's one of the hardest things that I have to work with sometimes, is when oftentimes one of the, I've had several couples like this that I work with, and one is really, like, really has found us and, like, this is exactly what I want to do. I really want to learn this stuff, and brings the other along kind of kicking and screaming. And it's a tough one. Because the patterns that have gotten them in trouble are patterns that one person cannot disentangle. It takes both. And you can make it better, you know, so, like, instead of having screaming fights where they punch each other or whatever, you know, they can calm down and not, like, if one person's really working hard, you can really kind of calm things down and not have these whatever big conflagrations that they used to have. So that can make a difference, but they're not going to actually get to the point where they're actually able to build intimacy and have a really fulfilling relationship if they're not both on board. And sometimes, I mean, oftentimes I don't know what happens. You know, they stop seeing me and I have no idea what happens. Sometimes I know they break up. And so, it's a tough one. It's a really tough one. Because you really do need both people who are willing to at least learn some basic skills about being able to tolerate their triggers and speak self-responsibly. I mean, the basic fundamentals, speak self-responsibly, have self-compassion, and be able to not, you know, not criticize, not blame, not be defensive, that kind of thing.
So when you were talking earlier about being a great spouse or partner, those are the things you're talking about.
Yes, yeah, exactly.
Can
exactly.
you repeat them again?
Sure. So having compassion for yourself and others, and your partner, you know, basically, aware of your feelings around when you feel them, tolerating your feelings without blowing up, shutting down, or self-medicating, communicating your feelings without defensiveness, criticism, or blame or self-blame, and happy to learn and grow.
So that's how to be.
That's how to be a good partner.
That's catch.
That's catch. Yep. And then the opposite in terms of finding, right? Yeah. If you're single and you're looking for the right partner, you're looking for somebody who has those skills.
Yes.
Somebody who can, you know, is compassionate with themselves and other people, is aware of their feelings, can communicate their feelings, etc. So you're looking for somebody with those skills. And we have this process which we call assessment, which is very commonly not done in lesbian, you know, the standard thing for lesbians, right, is they have, we have a couple of dates, right? There's attraction, there's chemistry, you know, and if you sort of have enough in common, then you go to bed. And then the next thing you know, you're in a relationship. I mean, that's sort of the standard. And, but the problem is that most lesbians have no idea, like, number one, whether or not they have compatible relationship visions. Do they want to do the same things in their lives or similar things, you know? Do they, if one person wants to travel the world for their retirement and the other wants to sit at home and watch basketball, that's not going to be a compatible vision. It doesn't matter how many skills they each have. It can be amazing catches, right? But if their visions are not compatible, it's still going to be, it'll be less of a train wreck than if they didn't have skills, but it's still not going to work very well if they really want totally different things for their lives. I mean, the two biggest things that we see differences are for younger women, women who want kids and women who don't want kids. And then for older women, it's women who are retiring or retired and they have a retirement, they have a lifestyle, they want to live in retirement. And whereas women who just want to keep working for whatever reason, they have a business or they just like to work or they have to work. And so that's often a difference in relationship vision. You know, somebody's retired and ready to, you know, go on Olivia cruises and you know, go run their RV, whatever. And somebody else who's got a business and, you know, is, you know, sort of hanging around, doing that. Those are not going to be very compatible.
So they knock on your door, help, what do we do? And
well, actually, I mean, one of the things that we teach in our, we have a course that's a 12-week class, which actually is there's 12, it's in this book. It's the 12 weeks in this book. And we teach women how to talk about relationship visions, first, second, third date. So they don't have to wait until they're like in a relationship to figure it out. They actually talk about it while they're early dating to find out whether or not this person who they're potentially going to, you know, keep going with is actually, number one, is a catch, but also has a relationship vision that's compatible with theirs. So,
and some people, I think, are willing to forego the vision of, you know, 30 years from now, I want to retire and you want to travel the world. Mm-hmm. They're willing to forego that for the instant gratification of having someone right now, and we'll worry about that later.
And that's when problems happen.
Yeah, I mean,
difficulty.
Yeah, I mean, I do think that if you're not thinking about like the compatibility in that sense of relationship vision, that it may come down the line where you have a rub, you have something where you like, well, wait a minute, I want to go this way and you want to go that way. I mean, it's also possible to, I mean, one of the things that, for example, Ruth and I, our relationship vision includes room for us each to grow in whatever way we each need to grow. And so that has meant in the span of our relationship, different, like we haven't lived together for the entire 10 years. There have been times when we didn't live together and times when we did, you know, times when we were doing different things. And so there's room for both of us to do whatever it is we want to do. So that's one way to build a relationship where you don't have to be stuck in one particular structure. You know, you build in your into your vision this idea that you both have room to grow and change and do different things.
But that says a lot about your character, though. You know,
well,
that you're able to.
It says a lot about our preferences. I mean, some women don't have that preference. I mean, they really want to sort of want to really be very connected and do all the same things a lot. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's just a preference. Mm-hmm.
Do it your way.
Yeah,
you just separate it. That takes a lot of character to be able to be confident and secure within yourself to let your partner just fly. You know?
Yeah, it's true. It takes some inner work for sure. It takes some inner work. Yeah, definitely. Mm-hmm. Definitely. Yeah.
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 So, I'm just thinking about people I know, and I think people who perceive Diana and me in our relationship, they always say, oh, yeah, Di and Cher, they're tied at the hip. You know, if one can't do it, the other's not going to do it.
Uh-huh.
You know, and we do almost everything together, but I think that we haven't really spoken what our relationship vision is, but we have an understanding that we're so supportive of each other. It's like, whatever she wants to do, go do it. I'm not going to hold you back.
But I'm different. See, I hold her back.
No, you don't. What do you mean?
Okay, well, I have, and I felt really bad about it a few times. Back in the day, way back in the day, you wanted to go to the Peace Corps, and I didn't want you to leave me. So, but she forgave me, and we're all happy.
I mean, I think there's so many different ways that you can put together a relationship, you know, and different choices. And you can, you know, and also what's true is that I think we as individuals might create a different vision with different people in a way. I mean, I think that there are ways in which things connect more than, I mean, there's always ways where I always want autonomy. I mean, I'm really somebody who likes autonomy and I enjoy autonomy. And so no matter who I was with, I would want that. It happens that Ruth is somebody who also really enjoys autonomy. And so we have that together. But I think that there's all sorts of ways. And the most important thing we always say, most important thing is that you know it, that you know what it is, you know what you want, you're clear about what you want, and you articulate what you want in a way that's honest. And that's all. I mean, and you can find, there's so many women out there, and there's so many different, I mean, you can find a woman. We often, people say, well, you know, X, Y, and Z, like, well, I'm not going to find a woman who wants to be with somebody who, whatever that it is, you know, the truth is you can, you know, it's possible, you know,
but whether you do have to put it out there though.
Yeah,
that's what you're saying.
Exactly.
Right?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
And you did it so beautifully in your book. Oh my gosh.
Ad.
I was going through your book and I got to your Craigslist.
Right.
You found each other on Craigslist.
Yeah.
And how detailed your information, what you were seeking. Oh my, Michelle,
the
that
story
was powerful.
Is, well, it's a little, there is a bit of a magical piece to the way Ruth and I met, I have to say, right? So I was in school. I was going back to school, going to seminary actually at the time. And I wasn't all that sure I wanted to date, but some friends of mine were dating and I was like, oh, you know, maybe I should go ahead and do it. But then I was like, oh, you know, and then, but one day I was meditating. And this ad, the ad that's in the book, like just came to me, like in the meditation. And I'm like, well, I'm meditating. So I put it away because I'm meditating, right? You know, sort of. And then about a week later, it came back. The whole thing just came back to me. And I happened to be sitting in front of my computer. So I just type it up and say, you know, I go to Craigslist. I just type it in. I didn't really write the ad. I mean, I don't know who wrote it, but it wasn't really me. And you know, clicked on submit. And then the next thing I know, well, actually, I was sick. So there was a week or so delay. But then Ruth says that when she read the ad, she knew that I was the next person she was going to be involved with. So there's a bit of magic there. Mm-hmm. But also what's true, we say this over and over again, that if we had met 5 or 10 years before we actually did meet in 2006, our relationship would have been a train wreck. Mm. Complete train wreck. We have, you know, I think that there are patterns that we both have that we've built a lot of skills before we met, so that we didn't get into patterns that we would have gotten into had we not learned those skills. Mm-hmm. And so it really was those skills. And, you know, some of the skills, of course, we've learned along the way. But totally, if we had met 10 years earlier than we did, 1996, for instance, it wouldn't have worked because neither of us had the skills to make it work.
Interesting. Mm-hmm.
So there is some magic to it, but it also wasn't, it isn't just because, you know, it doesn't work just because we were the right people for each other. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So
I'm thinking about, should we take a, go ahead.
Yeah. Well, okay. I think this is a good time to take a music break.
Oh, okay.
And give you a moment to catch your breath
and
have a sip of water and stuff. So you brought a song, one of your favorite songs. Could you introduce it and then we'll play
it? Sure. Well, I've been a total fan of Annie Lennox for ages. And this particular song, it's just beautiful. And it speaks to my heart. And so I love it.
What's the name?
A Thousand Beautiful Things.
Enjoy.
Every day I write the list of reasons why I still believe they do exist.
A thousand beautiful things.
And even though it's hard to see, the glass is full and not half empty. Close my eyes, never close.
And that was Annie Lennox. What was the name of the song again?
A Thousand Beautiful Things.
So gorgeous.
Yeah.
I do have to say that I was telling Michelle earlier that when I first saw Annie Lennox when I was in high school, she was with the Eurythmics and they were on TV. And here was this woman singing and she had a woman's voice. But what I saw was a woman in a suit and it just knocked my socks off. I was just like flabbergasted. Mm-hmm. I was amazed. And
I think when I was in college, I saw, I didn't see her live, but I saw like on TV wherever Grace Jones was also wearing a suit. And yeah,
that's
same
something
thing.
Else,
yeah.
isn't it? Oh yeah. My goodness. Yeah. All these women in suits.
Yep.
So we're talking to Michelle Moraine about her book, Conscious Lesbian Dating and Love. And in the beginning, when we introduced you, we talked about your book covering some neuroscience and psychology and some mm-hmm. spirituality. Mm-hmm. And I was wondering if you could break it down and tell us mm-hmm. a little bit about each of those
sure.
subjects
in the
book.
Yeah, so mm-hmm. the neuroscience, you know, the truth is that so much of what happens in relationships are about brain chemistry. Mm-hmm. And two of the most important things that happen, one is at the beginning of a relationship, when two people are mutually attracted, and especially if they've been physically intimate, there's a process called limerence.
How do you spell that?
L-I-M-E-R-N-E-C-E, I think.
Okay.
And limerence is a brain state. It's designed evolutionarily to help us make babies, right? That's its purpose, bond. So that, and it's your brain is pumping out lots of endogenous opiates or internal heroin, and oxytocin and stuff. And so we're literally stoned, right? And so
wow.
what happens so often with lesbians seem to be, well, women tend to go into limerence more quickly and sort of more intensely. So you have two women, that's like, you know, yeah, double the dose, right? And so oftentimes what happens is that, you know, again, the whole thing is, you know, there's a date or two or three, there's attraction, there's sex, instant limerence, and an instant relationship. And the problem with limerence is that you are stoned, right? You can't assess this other person. You can't, you know, there could be red flags, you know, flying in your face with this person, but you're so stoned that you wouldn't notice them. You know, you ignore them, right? They could be an alcoholic, or they could be critical, or they could be, and you make excuses for them, or you'd say, oh, it's going to get better if we, you know, as we get, you know, because you're in this sort of brain, this brain stone state. So that's part of what we talk about is delaying limerence as long as possible so that you can assess who is this person the right partner, right? The second piece of neuroscience that's important is when people are in relationships. And this happens actually at families. It happens, you know, when you're driving down the street, down the road. We get triggered. And it's also called flooded in the psychology parlance. And what being triggered is actually you're activating your fight or flight system that was, again, evolutionarily designed to keep us alive, right? And so we're sort of facing something that seems to be a mortal danger, but in fact is not a mortal danger. You know, it's your partner left the sponge in the sink or you know, there's spilled the milk or whatever, you know, or didn't call when they said they would, right? But our brains are like, meh, you know, they're on high alert and are like, this is a life or death emergency, which it's not. And so part of what we teach in the book and in our classes is how to handle that trigger, what happens with that trigger is that there's a part of our brain called the amygdala, which is totally responsible for this stuff. And it hijacks the traffic that would go to your sort of frontal cortex, which is the thinking part of your brain. It actually takes that traffic away. It hijacks it. Because, of course, when you're running away from a tiger or a bear, you don't want to be thinking, oh, how long are those teeth or how fast can they run? You just want to get out of there, right? You just want to move, right? So that's, but when you're dealing with a regular sort of non-threatening thing, you actually do need to think. And it's impossible, literally impossible for anybody to act or speak skillfully when they're triggered. And so what you have to do is get yourself untriggered. And so that's part of what we teach here is how to get people untriggered so that you can then get this prefrontal cortex online and speak skillfully and wisely. So that's the two big neuroscience pieces. There's a few other things, but that's the biggest pieces.
That's powerful the way you described that. This is your background too,
yeah,
Dr.
Yeah,
Moraine,
yeah.
Right?
I'm a neuroscientist, yeah, by training. Yeah,
yeah, beautiful.
And what mm-hmm. what I think is interesting is that, you know, there are two very, very powerful forces in evolution, right? And that's survival and reproduction. And so much of our brain is like designed to facilitate those two things. But modern life, you know, most of us don't deal with mortal dangers all the time. And, you know, lesbians certainly we're not about to reproduce, right? And so, you know, our lives are not rotated around the reproduction or, you know, survival from mortal danger, but yet that's our brains are. And so we have to recognize that. We have to really know this about ourselves, know this about our brains, and figure out ways, learn skills to handle the way that our brains work. So, mm-hmm. yeah.
That's very powerful. Okay.
And great. So the psychology piece, we do, I mean, there's a lot of work that's been done over the years, mostly in straight contexts, unfortunately, about what works in relationships and what doesn't. There's a great relationship researcher, John Gottman, who you may have heard of, who's got, he like can watch a couple for a minute on a video interacting and know with amazing accuracy whether or not they'll be together in 5 years, you know. And it's because of very specific things that happen, dynamics that happen in relationships, specific dynamics like criticism or contempt or defensiveness or, you know, and so those are things you can really point out and see, and that will predict what happens to a relationship. So those kinds of, we bring that kind of research in to bear. And other kinds of people who do relationship researching. And then the spirituality stuff, well, Ruth and I have somewhat different backgrounds. Ruth, her PhD is in transpersonal psychology, which is sort of, and I wish I can't really explain it totally, but it's sort of a Jungian, you know, sort of spiritual, this sort of mix of spirituality and psychology. Mm-hmm. And she has a shamanic practice, and she does shamanic work with people, which is basically about being able to bring in your inner wisdom into and sort of learn from your inner wisdom. My background is a combination of Buddhist and Christian, and mostly the stuff that we talk about is more about Buddhist, where there's a lot of mindfulness, the techniques that Buddhism has for you know, being aware of your feelings, being aware of what's going on in your body. There's some great loving kindness meditations that we use. It's called metta meditation, which is a Buddhist practice. We bring that in as well. So it's definitely a pretty wide mix. We're sort of synthesizing a lot of different threads that come together for this work. Mm-hmm. So yeah. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I guess that's yeah.
Wow, some powerful stuff. So tell us how this book came about. I know.
Yeah, so Ruth is actually the primary author of the book.
Okay.
And we actually do have a couples book. This is the singles book. We have a couples book that's in progress, and I don't know when it'll come out, but it's in progress. Mm. And so this is really about dating, and it's got a good chunk about being a right partner. It's got a good chunk about communication skills, about handling triggers, about self-compassion, self-love, because those are skills that you need in order to find the right partner. But it really is geared more toward singles who are, because there's a lot of dating skills and that kind of stuff in here as well. So that's really the focus of this one. Yeah.
So we, Sharon and I were thinking, because I know we do a lot of stuff together as a partnership.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're just curious, how do you go day to day and do your partnership, you and Ruth? Uh-huh. And
it's interesting. You know, I think, I remember what it was a few weeks ago, we were like, well, what was life like before we were doing Conscious Girlfriend? I mean, it is when you work together as a couple, there's an added sort of set of things that you don't have when you just live together and are just a regular couple, right? And I actually love working together. You know, we actually teach together quite a bit, and we actually work well. We complement each other. We have, you know, we have different skills, and we have different relationship stories, and we also have different perspectives and different personalities, and they happen to be pretty complementary. So it actually works really well. Sometimes we have to, oftentimes we'll do this sitting in the hot tub, right? We'll just sort of, talk about what's happening and talk about the ways in which the work affects us. It's, when you're a couple, a couple doing relationship teaching, it's kind of fun because, something happens. This happens all the time. Something happens, something might happen between us, and then we're like, okay, we'll have to figure out how to talk about this, right? it's fun because we get to actually apply. Number one, we apply the work, but also we get to have handy examples, for people.
When you're teaching,
so you go
through. Okay, this is catch. This is okay. We got this going on right now.
Whatever it is, whatever that might be, sort of something happens, we'll talk about, something that might have triggered us about something that the other one did and how we dealt with that trigger and stuff. And so,
but does it ever get tiring? I mean, just listening to you, I can see people listening to the show going, oh, that's just too hard. Just let me yell and get it over with, and then we're going to go out to dinner. I mean, it's just like...
Well, the thing is, I mean, I hear that. And the thing is, though, that, I mean, one of the things that that Gottman talks about is that that actually negative interactions have a much bigger effect on brains than positive ones. So for every negative interaction that a couple has, they have to have 5 positive interactions to counteract it.
Really?
Because the negative ones have such a big, positive things don't even, most of our evolutionary history, we were in a land of scarcity and mortal danger. And so negative things were important for us to pay attention to.
Mm-hmm.
And positive things were not that important. Mm-hmm. And so positive interactions with couples don't have as much effect on the relationship as negative ones do. And so if you keep having a fight and then going, well, that's only one on one, right? I mean, it's like you need 5, you need 4 more. So it So it doesn't actually, so the best thing to do is, of course, avoid the negative ones as much as you can. And you can. I mean, it's like Ruth and I talk about, it's like we each get triggered all the time. Right, that's inevitable. We're gonna get triggered.
Oh, good.
It's not about avoiding. it's not about avoiding the trigger at all.
Okay,
but it's about being able to handle the trigger inside yourself, dismantle your story, because it's like oftentimes what happens is somebody, a partner does something, right, and like this couple that I was working with, one partner really wanted the refrigerator to be clean, and the other didn't clean the refrigerator when she said she would, right. And for the one who wanted the refrigerator clean, it meant the other one not cleaning the refrigerator meant that she didn't care about her.
Mm.
But of course, that wasn't true. It was a story the other person was saying. We have to dismantle those stories. The one who wasn't cleaning the refrigerator just didn't really think it was all important or whatever, but it wasn't about not caring about the other person. So I think what happens is when things happen, we make stories of them. And so we have to dismantle the stories.
But it doesn't help when the partner who wants the refrigerator clean says, if you cared about me, you would clean the refrigerator.
Well, see, that's the story that partner is making, right? And so that's why it takes two. Why both partners have to be willing to learn and grow. They both have to be willing to dismantle their stories. And when you can dismantle your stories, it's much easier to navigate, negotiate things when it's not about, do you love me? Do you care about me? Do you want to be with me forever? When it's not about that, it's just about, personality or inclination or whatever, or forgetfulness or whatever. And it's not about this. There's not all this other stuff hanging on it.
Mm-hmm. So both people, it's both parts of the couple, not just one saying, okay, so I'm going to dismantle this part and say, okay, you can, it's okay if you don't clean the refrigerator.
Certainly if one person can dismantle their own stories, that can go far. But to really go to a place where you can really build intimacy and really, really handle conflict skillfully and grow together. Because the thing is, conflict you two people, right? You're two different people. You have different perspectives, different ideas of the world, different ways of doing things. Conflict is inevitable. But the thing is, you can get to know each other better and learn more about each other. I mean, another great example with a couple that I work with was one person was sort of the budgeter of the family, and the other person didn't really want to deal with budgeting, right? And so the one who was the budgeter would like follow the other person around with a notebook, right? So, you know, you spent this and you spent that, right? And they had this horrible argument about it. But when we sort of coached them about it, it turned out that the one who didn't want to budget, you know, she was like, it scared her. She got afraid of the idea of budgeting because when she was a kid, they'd have really bad financial trouble and they had to live in ramen noodles for like, you know, a year, and she never wanted to be in that situation again. And the other one, you know, there was something else that was similar, right? And so they learned a lot about each other. And they learned about, oh, well, that was what's behind this, or that's what's happening. And it was so much easier to deal with the issue once you understand the feelings behind it, the underneath it. Once you get underneath the surface thing, because the surface thing is never what it's about. It's never about the refrigerator. It's never about the money. It's never about the lawn, how well you mow the lawn, or any. It's never about any of that stuff. It's about the fears, or about the past, or about old patterns. It's always about something else. Yeah. So
you agree with that, Cher?
Well, it's a lot to take in.
Uh-huh.
It's a lot to take in. I would say that sometimes in relationships, a partner A might act like partner A's parent, and partner mm-hmm. B might accuse partner A of being that parent in a not
that
so nice way.
That sounds like us,
way.
Honey. You can say my name.
And...
make it easy on Dr. Moraine.
So I don't know. You hear a lot about fair fighting because, you know, like you just said, conflict is inevitable. but I don't know. Well, what's your feeling about that?
Well, I think we teach this method, which is in the book, called The Inarguable Truth. And The Inarguable Truth is, it's totally down to the feeling level. And so it's like, you know, it could be something like when I realized that I felt this twist in my gut and I was afraid when you didn't call me when you said you would, right? That it's really sort of that feeling level. And so it's... And it's inarguable because, you know, obviously you're not going to say, well, no, you didn't feel that, right? I mean, it's because if I said something like, I'm really upset that you didn't, because you didn't call me because you don't care about me, right? Well, that, you know, nobody's going to say, well, I care about you, right? You know, that's right. So, but I think what happens when we get down to that feeling level is like, I mean, you told me the example, so I'm going to say, you know, give you, yeah, you know, so like, you know, when you said, you know, this thing, I had this twist on my gut and I realized I was afraid because you were kind of sounding like my mother, right? Or I was afraid that maybe you're looking at this like my mother would or my father would, right? So basically it's expressing the fear, because it's probably fear, I would bet. Maybe there's something else, maybe it's some anger, I don't know. But anger is a tough one because oftentimes... many people have what we call a fight response to fear. So they get afraid and the first thing they do is to lash out. And it seems like anger, but in fact it's not anger, it's actually fear. And so if you can get in touch with what's underneath, like what's underneath whatever the statement is that you made, or what's underneath the sense that maybe this is start talking like a parent, to get underneath the feelings that are happening at that moment. Because that's... you know, I mean, because ultimately, I mean, one of the things that's amazing, our mentors were Gay and Katie Hendricks, who mostly work with straight people, you know, we trained with them. But they, I mean, their perspectives really aren't that many problems to be solved. There really aren't that many things you need to actually solve. That so often it's just about expressing the emotions that are happening and letting each other know what your emotions are. and that goes so far, because, you know, it's like, yeah, it's just there, I think we have the sense that, oh, we have to fix this, or we have to solve this, but in fact we often don't. It actually doesn't. What matters more is the connection, reconnecting with each other. That's the core. That's the important piece.
Beautifully said. We're running out of time, and that's always the case, but you've been really wonderful. But I want to ask, you know, you tell the audience what's coming. What's coming up for you?
Yeah, the biggest thing coming up for us is we're doing a retreat at the end of June, June 30th to July 3rd. It's going to be in the Santa Cruz Mountains, and only have a few spots left. So it's for single or couple lesbians, either. And it's, you know, 3 days of skills and you know, communication stuff and self-compassion. And for single women, they'll be talking about dating skills. For couples, we'll be talking more about communication and intimacy building. It'll be fun. It's down in the Presentation Center in Los Gatos.
How do people contact you?
And our website is consciousgirlfriend.com. You can email love@consciousgirlfriend.com if you have questions or things you want to know. And we also have a 12-week roadmap course for singles coming up. It's an online class biweekly group video coaching calls.
Nice.
It's starting on May 23rd.
So if anybody out there wants to know more, consciousgirlfriend.com. And we have 1 minute left for you, Michelle Moraine, Dr. Michelle Moraine, to give any kind of advice or suggestions to anyone out there who might be listening. What do you want them to know?
The thing I would start with, the most important thing I would start with, is to love themselves, is to build self-love and self-compassion, so that when difficult feelings come up, that they can feel compassion, they can be okay in themselves, they can love themselves, they can not be critical of themselves, they can turn off the self-critical messages in their head, because that really gets in the way of happy relationships. And that's been the biggest transformation for me in my life, of being able to have the relationship I have with Ruth, has been to cultivate self-love and self-compassion. So that's my number one.
And that's true for anybody, male, female, single,
couple, anybody. Yep.
Big skill, big important skill.
Yeah, it is.
Thank you so much for coming.
Well, thank you for having me. Thank you for having me.
So 2 years from now?
Yeah.
Couples book.
Yeah. Sorry Ruth couldn't be here, but she sends her love. And thanks for having me. It's great.
You're so welcome. We want everyone to remember that, like Michelle, you too can be living proof that through sharing your passions, you can use your creativity as another way to help the world. You too can be visible and vibrant in telling your story. This is Diana and Sheridan, and we will be back next month. Until then, good night. What have you done today to make you feel proud? It's never too late to try. What have you done today to make you feel proud? Support for music programming on KRCB-FM comes from NPR's Music's Tiny Desk, presenting this year's Tiny Desk contest winner, Galen Lee, at the Tiny Desk Contest on the Road Songs We Love events. This will take place at the Lagunitas Brewing Company on Tuesday, May 10th. You can get tickets and more information at radio.krcb.org. Still so many answers I don't know. You're listening to KRCB-FM Windsor Santa Rosa, Radio 91, online all the time at krcb.org. It's just before 9 p.m. Stay with us. Open Space District is next. I'm on my way. Can't stop me now. You can do the same, yeah. What have you done today to make you feel proud? It's never
today.